RSN 927 Summer Breakfast.
Bryce McGain, hello and welcome.
Good morning, Maisie, and well, you certainly know it's summer, the post-Christmas area. Generally, as soon as the Aussie Open starts, it's a furnace. So the weather's certainly done its part to make, well, put Melbourne in the highlight reel for around the world. Sunsets have been beautiful, so it's a great time of the year.
We can talk to Craig Gabriel about this, but they've changed the heat policy this year, the Australian Open.
So no more wet bulb?
Well, remember the wet bulb?
I do remember the wet bulb. That confused a lot, but I'm still rattled with that. I'm still working my way through Duckworth Lewis, but and how that fits into T20. But nonetheless, the wet bulb.
It used to take into account humidity and everything, but it was 45 degrees outside, and they go, "Oh no, on the wet bulb, it's only 28." No, that's fine.
Is that
people
like
melting
like
to their seats.
People, and the players are changing shoes, weren't they? Because they were melting on the court.
Yes. But the wet bulb says, oh, no, you're right to go. So, no, it's just, you know, they have the wet bulb in the A-League as well.
Do they?
So they share it around. I wonder what it actually looks like.
Yeah, well, I have no idea. Is it a thermometer?
I don't know.
It's a bulb that gets wet, I suppose. I don't know. It brings all sorts of thoughts of what it might look like. But so they have that. So different heat policy. Do you know what it is
in the A-League?
Yeah, no. For the tennis.
Yeah, I do. I've read it. I couldn't recite it off the top of my head, but I'll look that up for you and we'll go through it. It's just they've slightly amended it from previous years where it's a little bit more comfortable now for the players. So I think there's different ratings now of heat where they'll eventually get to a threshold, much like the wet bulb, but I think there's a few different things taken into consideration and extra breaks and that sort of stuff. So
longer
breaks between sets and...
Yeah, the important thing to consider is the player's health and everyone's health, let alone the uncomfortable part of watching it, but the players out there, I think there needs to be a lot bigger focus on that. Now, talking about tennis, what a great weekend it was for Alex Dimino.
Fantastic.
This is a real breakthrough, isn't it? We've got a player here. As much as we're looking around at others, there's one that's right under our nose that has performed exceptionally well, is in top form and career best, and can go into this week and next week, hopefully, super confident.
The only problem is he's got to play today. So he doesn't, speaking of recovery, he doesn't get a lot of time to recover, a poor old Alex Dimino.
But I guess when you're running hot, that's fine. Keep the engine running. No. I don't think he wants to sit around and put his feet up.
No. How do you reckon a few of the Eastern Europeans go? So you might have done a pre-season in Russia where it was -10 over Christmas. Indoors. Ruggy up every time you go outside. You come straight to Australia and it's 35 degrees on day one of the Australian Open.
Well, I remember last year when we spoke to Roger Federer and he was saying about his preparation all the time. He goes to the deserts in Dubai. So he spends a few weeks there as part of his preparation to really get the heat up and preparing the best way for the Aussie Open, knowing that it can be really stinking hot here in the next fortnight.
So the forecast for this week, 35, 35, 32, 31, 31. So that's...
That's a perfect week, though, isn't it?
Not exactly comfortable.
That's summer in Melbourne.
Yeah,
31, it will seem balmy back there later in the week, won't it? Just mild.
Off.
Yeah, we'll be quite used to it by then. But it is a great time of the year. It's exciting. There's so many people in and around Melbourne. It has a unique kind of vibe. It's not like a grand final week or even a spring carnival time, although it has a bit of similarity to that because a lot of people come from around the world. But the Aussie Open just brings in this incredible vibe into Melbourne. We're very, very lucky to live where we do.
Where do you rate it on the sporting calendar? Because for me, I think it'd be in the top two or three events of the year. The Australian Open.
Well, the Grand Prix is another one that brings people from all around the world, and they it's not just from a particular area or a little pocket of people. The Grand Final, obviously, that's a real local part that brings a lot of people out and it has a lot of interest locally. But for a global scale, I think the Aussie Open's probably the number one.
Yeah, the number one. Yeah, what they've done really well is make it an event. So you could go to the tennis and not watch any live tennis at any of the courts and you'll have a fantastic day because so much else going on.
Yes.
It's a lot like the spring carnival, really, in terms of the atmosphere around the track. It's very similar to what you get now around Melbourne Park with so many different events happening in conjunction with the actual tournament.
And the further exciting part of that, the city takes that on in the evenings. All the restaurants open, walking through the streets of Melbourne, the lights. Look, it's just a perfect time of year. It's always balmy in the evening.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a really nice time to be out and about. Even as a local, if you don't necessarily love the tennis, make it a night to come out to the city and dine out, wander around. You can see from, you don't even have to have centre court tickets to go and watch in the evening. You can sit down in a lot of the open air areas and have a drink and
Garden buy Square. To
eat. Yeah, it's beautiful. So there's so much going on. And often as locals, we miss a lot of it because it's, oh, well, that just goes on. I don't like my tennis. But there's so much more to it.
It was funny. I was having a couple of beers on Friday night, and the venue had a blue tennis court painted in for the Australian Open.
Hey, that's great. What venue was that?
Just in the city.
Yeah?
Yeah, in Collins Street. So, yeah, it was quite weird. Walked in. Suddenly there's a light blue tennis court.
But that's the extension of it.
And yeah, I think it was great.
The design of the city, and that's what so many people, I did some tours last week at the MCG, and there was people from, again, around the world, mostly, you know, cricket fans that were there, but obviously the National Sports Museum is there, so it covers everything from Australian sport and around the world. But I guess the feeling is that it extends the close proximity of our stadiums, major stadiums. Other cities just simply don't have the design that Melbourne does. I guess that's what makes it so, you know, we're so very lucky to just wander up to the city, enjoy the things that, you know, and all the themes always carry through into the city, and we do it really well. It's a great place to be living.
Do indeed. The best sporting city in the world, in my honest opinion. Summer breakfast on RSN 927. Don't forget, you can get involved anytime you want. 1300 652 927 or shoot us a text 0416 90 50 52 if you want to have your say on whatever happened over the weekend, because my goodness, there was a lot of sport.
Triple header.
Did you survive all three?
Well, no.
Neither did I.
I tried. I started getting hooked into the last one. Now, that's a real trap when you've got to get up at four. But
the first two were absolute stinkers.
Yeah, they were blowouts. So when I saw that what was happening there, I was able to get some other stuff done with a bit of family around. But and then I started getting tuned into the last one. I went, no, get out of here. Get to bed. Get some sleep.
71-run win for the Sydney Thunder over the Adelaide Strikers after Shane Watson went nuts with the bat, hitting five sixes in his 68 from 40 balls.
Evergreen, isn't he?
He is indeed. The Renegades were really disappointing. 4 for 192, the Brisbane Heat made, as the Bash Brothers went nuts, 69 and 66 for McCullum and Lynn, dominating the top of the order. The Renegades all out for 91. So that was a fizzer down in Geelong.
Yeah, real blowout there. That'd be disappointing. The Renegades they'd be feeling that, because they really look forward to those fixtures. I've dropped both of them down at Geelong. And, you know, they love that connection with that region of Victoria and certainly the holidaymakers down on the Surf Coast.
And then the Perth Scorchers defeating the Sydney Sixers. Sixers made 5 for 177 in their innings, and the Perth Scorchers 3 for 178 in reply, so chasing down the target with 7 balls remaining. Cameron Bancroft carried his bat through the entire innings, 87 not out from 61 deliveries, including 8 falls and a 6.
Perth were clinical. They are the real deal still. They're not far from this. Bancroft's made a big difference there, 87. Ashton Turner, and I know I banged on about him last week, but can he play?
Well, selectors listened.
Well, they have indeed. How dangerous is he going to be in that middle order, that maybe 4, 5, 6 position for Australia coming up for the T20s?
Can you see him sneaking into the one-day international squad? He was, of course, selected in the squad. They released him for this T20 game. Can you see him actually getting a game, or not at the moment?
Not at the moment. I think the Australian lineup will stay pretty solid. The only changes there might be around the spin bowling part, maybe, although Nathan Lyon did a good job there, a solid job in the one day. That was exciting enough at the SCG.
Well, for people who could watch it.
Well, yeah, that's a catch in itself, isn't it?
Shocker.
This is getting a little frustrating.
Well, I think people are just starting to realise how much one-day cricket is actually on Foxtel, which is a lot, and we're not getting exposure to the one-day international team. So on Saturday afternoon, I don't reckon I've ever seen Twitter explode as much from people who are ready to sit down, have a couple of drinks at home and watch the One Day International, only to realise it wasn't on TV. It was on only on Foxtel.
Yeah, you can stream it, though.
You can, yeah. Well, there are plenty of options, but I think a lot of people aren't used to that.
Yeah, I know. We've got to redirect how we watch it a bit. It's not saying go out there and buy Foxtel, although I'm sure that's part of what the deal is. But you can stream it. So just understanding how to go about that and made a bit easier. You know, the ABC, it's nearly an ad in itself.
Yeah.
This is how you get the cricket. And, you know, it would be something good for Cricket Australia to do to say, well, this is how you get it. This is how you get the game. Get it on your smart TV. You do it by 1, 2, 3, and there you are. You're catching up with retro, you know, One Day cricket uniforms and Australia doing well with yellow caps on. And,
yeah.
Look, that was actually a good look.
I loved
CG.
It. Oh, it looked sensational.
It did look really good. Oh, it brings back some memories.
For those who saw it.
Yeah, well, for those who did see it, yeah. So, and I know that's frustrating for a lot of people, but I think Cricket Australia, there's nearly a marketing opportunity there just to go 1, 2, 3, this is how you hook up and you're into it and it's straight up on your smart telly.
Well, I think the one, if you want to buy something to stream, KO Sports is the way to go because you can pay all these league passes for the NFL, NBA, whatever. I reckon your costs still add a lot.
What's that per month?
Oh, no idea, but I think it's about 80 a or KO is about 25, I think, a month, something like that. So it's pretty cheap compared to a lot of.
That's manageable, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're going to watch a lot of sport, I think that's the way to go. The only thing it doesn't have is the racing, but at least that's on Channel 78.
Yeah, that's
Victorian
right.
Victorian racing,
yeah.
At least. So, yeah, there's. Yeah, I think that's the way to go going forward if you want to watch sport without having to pay. A lot of money with Foxtel.
And for a lot of channels you just don't need.
No.
There's 100 channels of stuff you got to bypass to get to where you need to.
Although I did watch a very cool show over the last couple of weeks. Called
World Movies?
No, called Hunted. No. You know, it's gone, World Movies. Hunted, anyway, was this UK show where they dropped 10 people in the middle of Manchester and you had to, and they had intelligence try and chase you down for the next 25 days. So they had essentially old cops and MI5 agents and everything working from centrally in London. And from the time that they were dropped, basically had to go
like
off
Jason
the grid.
Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
In real life. Reality.
It was awesome.
That sounds very interesting.
Check that out if you're interested in that sort of stuff. It was very good fun. I very much enjoyed that. Time to chat now with the Lawn Peter Pub winner from the weekend, Hayden Cotter, who's done it again. Hayden, good morning and thanks for your time on RSN 927.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How does it feel after claiming it 2 years in a row? You're a teenage sensation now, Hayden.
Yeah, I was pretty glad to come back and do it again. I think I was pretty nervous after last year. It was a good year.
So,
come back is a really good.
How much training do you do for this during the year in these open water swim events?
Yeah, I do a fair bit of open water swimming. I think that's my main event. I think I've got nationals in 2 weeks. So I've been doing a lot of open water lately and just to come down, really good for Peter Pub and, yeah, worked out well.
So when you say open water training, how far would you swim each morning?
Each morning, maybe like 6K around there. Changes up on depending on the session. And then just try and do open water races each weekend or every now and then just to get a little bit of practice.
6K, that's unbelievable. I can't even swim a kilometre in a pool. With no waves. Now, tell us about the prestige of the event. Obviously, it's one of the most famous open water swims on the calendar in Australia. You're able to beat Sam Shepherd for a second consecutive year. I remember talking to him a couple of years ago. He won about 7 in a row, so no fluke again. Were you fearful that they might have come back a bit harder against you this year?
Yeah, it's a massive swim, I think. I live in Queensland and I've heard about the swim multiple times, so it's got a lot of prestige to it. But then to come out and beat, you know, like Olympians last year, Sam Shepherd this year, he's won it many times. A few of the younger kids, it's just even better. I know they would be trying hard to win it too.
Well, you certainly sound stoked. Well done and congratulations. In terms of the lawn swimming event, is it different in the cooler water than what it is and your preparation and what it is like to swim to what it is in your home state around Queensland and other areas around Australia?
Yeah, it's definitely different. In Queensland, well, you don't need a wetsuit. It's easy. you got to go down to Melbourne, got to get a wetsuit. But no, that helps a lot. Makes you swim fast. And just, yeah, go from there.
So it actually helps you with the buoyancy. Is that why it makes you swim fast?
Yeah, you just, with the extra like weight, I mean, you just sit higher in the water. It holds you up, and then just, yeah, so less part of your body's in the water, and you just glide across the top. Just makes it easier to swim, and therefore you go faster.
It's definitely a contact sport at the elite level, these open water events. How many times would you get pulled, tugged, smashed in the face, kicked? Is it a bit of carnage at the start of these big events?
Yeah, the start is definitely the worst. Everyone just goes crazy. But I don't know, I think it's all part of open water, really. Just got to be able to take it and then just try and have a good race after that.
I guess an important part of that is getting out in the front, where you spend most of your time. You don't get kicked if you're out the front.
Yeah, exactly. If you get out the front, you're not going to get whacked, so try and do that from the start.
So the next couple of weeks, training for the national championships, what do you go through now? Do you taper off a little bit before they come around, or do you go hard for another week and then relax a little bit?
Yeah, I'll come back and pick up training for a little bit longer and then probably taper soon, a little bit before the competition, just to be ready again.
And with the year ahead, obviously that's the next event there. Where do you want to take this in the longer term? Is it into the pool, into maybe the longer events for Olympic Games? Or what's your ultimate goal in your career in swimming?
I'd love to be able to make an Olympics for 10K open water swimming.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nationals this year is the start of 2020 trials. But I don't know about this year. It'd be good to make 2024 in the long term. That'd be the main goal.
Time to head to Adelaide and get the latest from the Tour Down Under with one of our friends here, Matt Keenan, who is always very generous with his time. Matt, good morning and welcome back to RSN 927.
Thanks. Good morning.
Caleb Ewan. Now, he had a bit of an indifferent year last year. We know missing out on the Tour de France ride, but nice to see him back in form at the start of 2019 with another stage win yesterday in the opening stage of the Tour Down Under. Tell us how it happened.
Yeah, it was an important win for Caleb yesterday. So yesterday was known as what is the Down Under Classic. It's not officially part of the Tour Down Under in terms of the race for the general classification, but it's a circuit race in the heart of Adelaide to get things started. And it was Caleb's first race with the full Lotto Soldal team around him. He rode the Bay Cycling Classic in Geelong and in Williamstown at the start of the year, just across the 1st, 2nd and 3rd of January. But this is the first time he's really been with the team. And after 4 years with Mitchelton Scott, and then as you mentioned, things went pear-shaped between him and the team when he didn't get selected for the Tour de France last year. He left that team. He's gone across to what was the old team of Robbie McEwen. They looked after him as a sprinter. They had Andre Greipel as a great sprinter. It also happens to be the team that Cadel Evans rode a couple of Tour de France's with. Both the times that he finished second, he was with this team. So he went there with a fair bit of pressure of, okay, I've made the right decision. I've gone to this team. I can still win. And he did it. He did it with the pressure. He beat Peter Sagan, was in second position, three-time world champion. And in third place was one of his old teammates from Mitchelton, Scott, Alex Edmondson. And I reckon there's a fair bit of relief for Caleb after the win.
Matt, do you think this is, and I know we'll delve into the Tour Down Under, that's important on the landscape now, but for Cadel, is that really important for, Caleb, is that really important in terms of getting trust with that new team to then start opening up these opportunities in the big events in the European summer?
Yeah, and it always is in any sport when you change team. Just, you come in with a fairly big reputation. Okay, you've got to earn their trust again, and he's done that with just that one race. But the pressure valve hasn't been released all that much. It'll really be on tomorrow, Tuesday, when it's the first road race. And as soon as he won the stage or the race last night, on social media, there was a whole bunch of people saying, okay, well, let's see how he goes in the road race. So the pressure has not been released as yet. And Tuesday will be a big test for him. He'll start out there as the favourite once more. But the team will be really happy with what he's delivered. They'll know that, okay, this is a guy that we haven't seen for the last couple of months because he's been back in Australia whilst we've all been in Europe. And he's got the self-motivation and discipline to get himself ready to beat the three-time world champion in his first race with us. So they'll be really comfortable with where he's at, and he'll be super happy with where the team is at. That was one of the issues he had with Mitchelton Scott, is he didn't feel internally in himself as if they completely backed him. Whereas the team last night, they showed 100% faith in Caleb Ewan, and together, collectively, they got the job done.
Has he got a good right-hand man next to him there that he'll use?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's got this big German guy called Roger Kluger, who was with him at Mitchelton Scott, and they didn't always select him to go into the same races with Caleb, which really upset him when they were together there as well. And as soon as he made the decision to leave that team, the first guy he wanted to take with him was Roger Kluger. And Roger's got a point to prove as well, because he felt as if the Mitchelton Scott team lost faith in him. So he's out there proving a point. He wants Caleb to win as much, if not more so, than if it was him trying to win himself. So he's got absolutely the right guy there with him. Plus, they've got the rest of a team in there that's accustomed to looking after a sprinter. They've honored Andre Greipel for many years, who's won 11 stages at the Tour de France. The management know how to get it done. They had Robbie McEwen there, who won 12 stages at the Tour de France. So he's definitely in the right place.
Well, that's exciting for him. Exciting, of course, on Tuesday when the Tour Down Under gets underway. What can we expect, Matt?
Tuesday, it's a day for the sprinter, so it's an important day there for Caleb Ewan. It starts in North Adelaide, finishes in Port Adelaide. It's 132 kilometres. That's going to be 41 degrees. Oh. So they can expect to try and drink a lot of water, but they won't be able to consume enough. It's the weather the first few days will be a bigger factor than what the actual course is. It's going to be a scorcher over here.
Is this one of the daunting things for the Europeans coming over? They know it's a great race and that they're well looked after. Of course, it's Adelaide. It's a beautiful place, all that. But it's like a furnace. It is just so dramatic in terms of the change of weather conditions from where they come from.
Furnace is the right word. And, yeah, they do worry about it, but they're not the only ones that worry about it. The race organisers do too. It causes them a lot of stress in, do we need to shorten the course? What do we need to do to adapt in terms of, we've got some athletes coming from Scandinavia, so it can be, you know, zero or below. It's a 40-degree turnaround for some of those people. And the human body, even if you're from Adelaide and you're accustomed to the heat, the body's not made for racing a bike in 40-plus degree temperatures. It really puts a lot of stress on it. The tennis faces the same problem as well now in Melbourne with some high forecasts over the next few days. So it's a really tough one for everyone involved.
Matt, are there any heat policies around cycling?
Yeah, there are. So they can bring the start of the stage forward slightly. They can reduce the length of the stage slightly, those sorts of things, and which, you know, they'll make the most of those options that they've got. I don't think it'll be an issue on the Tuesday because 133 kilometres, it'll take them a little over 3.5 hours, 3 hours, 45 minutes or thereabouts. I think that will stand in terms of the distance for that stage. The next day is 149 Ks, and it's Norwood going through to Angaston. It's a point-to-point race. It doesn't have a lot of deviations as you get there to try and create some shortcuts. So that'll be a challenge to see how they're able to handle that one. But I don't want to be in the shoes of the race organisers under these situations where, you know, 40-plus degree forecast, they've got a tough job.
Time to get our teeth stuck into the tennis with the Australian Open starting today. Day one to kick off at about 11 o'clock this morning. And who better to have in the studio than Craig Gabriel, who'll be with us all throughout the 2 weeks of the Australian Open. Craig, good morning and welcome back to RSN 927.
Morning, guys. Good to be with you.
Hope you pack plenty of T-shirts. It's 55 degrees.
Yeah, today. But when I get to the site, it'll be collar and tie on.
Oh, you're Lacoste collar and tie?
Exactly. You got it in one. The Lacoste t-shirt on now.
What are you most looking forward to?
Not taking taxis.
We've wound him up. Taxi took a little longer this morning, did it, than you did?
No, just refused.
Just refused?
Yeah.
I thought it was law that you actually had to...
I thought so. He said, take a tram. South Asian guy.
Maybe he recognised you and saw the dedicated Australian Open tram.
No, it wasn't.
All right. Okay. Taxis. Off the agenda, the taxis. Now,
What are you most looking forward to on day one? There are so many big matchups. Mm. Number of Australians in action, including Alex Dimonor, who's backing up from the win on the weekend. What's the match you're most looking forward to?
I think it's the three Australians that are on Margaret Caterina on the Australian focus. Alex Dimonor against Pedro Sousa should get through that one pretty comfortably. And then Ash Barty at night against Luxika Kumkum again should be a good passage. I think for both Ash and Alex, I can see clear passages to at least the third round. They should get through there. And then Bernie Tomic against Marin Cilic, last year's finalist, as the second night match on Margaret Caterina. But if we go away from the Australians, there are a couple of matches that I think could be quite fascinating with upset potential.
Okay.
One is Sloane Stephens against Taylor Townsend. Sloane can be a bit up and down. She's a wonderful player. Taylor is a lefty, won the Australian Juniors a few years ago, and packs a punch. So that's a possibility there. And the other one is Maria Sakkari against Yelena Ostapenko. I have a lot of time and a lot of raps on Maria Sakkari, and I think that could be one of the big upsets to start the Open.
And Ostapenko, of course, one of the ladies that Ash Barty defeated last week at Sydney International.
Yep.
Let's focus in on two of our main hopes.
Yep.
Obviously, Alex Dimonor winning over the weekend. The confidence he would get from the Sydney International win, how does that translate
Huge.
To Melbourne Park?
You're getting the runs on the board. He had a pretty good run in Brisbane, reaching the quarterfinals over there, and then got through some awkward matches, although he wasn't really threatened, but there were some awkward matches that he played. And getting those runs on the board are vital. You know, winning matches just oozes, helps your confidence and just boosts it big time. So he's on that roll. He's got a run going, and that's where it's going to be massive for him.
And I guess you can say the same about Ash Barty as well.
Yep.
Good form, in good touch, and with a home crowd right behind her as well.
Absolutely. She started playing well at Hotman Cup. Obviously disappointed at not securing the title in Sydney. Her second year running in the final over there. But Ash is the type of person that can just switch off those disappointments and just get on with it. She's so easygoing. Mm. And those sort of things, yeah, she would have been disappointed for a couple of hours. But it's a new day, new event, her home major, and she'll just pick it up and run.
With Alex Dimonor, you spoke about the confidence and how that can translate to Melbourne Park.
Mm.
He's had a huge off-season. I've been speaking to a couple of people around his camp, and his training has been off the charts. How important is that going to be? And does he have to develop a weapon that he can use in his game over the next couple of years? And where does that come from?
His weapons are his brain, his mind, and his speed. Those are his weapons. He's never going to have a massive shot. He's going to have great shots, and he's going to be there in such fast time or quick time that he's going to capitalize. And his anticipation is so good. He reads the game so well. And that's why he's being likened to Hewitt. It was the same sort of thing with Hewitt. It wasn't that he had a massive weapon or stroke, whether it was a serve or a forehand or whatever. It was his speed around the court and his brain.
We spoke to Alex Dimonor a couple of months ago, and the way he's used Leighton Hewitt over the last couple of years as a mentor and almost quasi-coach, really, and the way that he's able to learn from him, how important is Leighton in this journey for Alex?
Look, he has to be important. I mean, his company also manages Dimonor, so there's obviously a lot of connection over there. And I think, as the Davis Cup captain, he's around the players quite a bit, so he's going to draw on the mind aspect of Leighton Hewitt and the work ethic. So those are big positives.
Caroline Wozniacki is returning to Melbourne and Australia to defend a title. Is that putting more pressure on her? How do you think she'll cope with that defending title challenge?
Yeah, that's going to be the $64 question. It's the first time she's doing it in her career where she's defending a major. She's obviously defended a lot of titles in her career, but never a major. And this is a different kettle of fish altogether. Caro is a lovely person. She should get through her first match, although there could be some dicey moments in this against Alison van Oetvank. And, you know, she's going to be nervous. There's no doubt about it. Walking on the court, the first few games or so, Wozniacki's going to be nervous. I don't see her going all the way again this year. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So who do you think... Why has there been that shift with Wozniacki in terms of her ability to go?
She's got some health issues.
Yeah.
She's managing those. And then she, I think, lost a bit of confidence with some of her results. So I think it's part of that. But also this whole different experience about going out there and defending a major is, as I said, is such a different situation. But I just also feel that... She has not had as many matches under her belt that she'd like. She lost out early in Auckland before coming here. Mm. And I think if she had picked up a few more matches there, maybe different.
Craig, the women's draw is wide open.
Yeah.
It's nearly impossible to pick who can ultimately win between Angelique Kerber, Serena Williams even still going around, and maybe Carolina Piskova. Look, there's plenty of opportunities for all the girls that they must be going in, all with a bright spark to actually holding up the title at the end of 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they all believe they've got an opportunity. You know, Simona Halep is not doing that well at the moment. She hasn't played enough. In fact, I think she hasn't really played up other than losing to Ash Barty in Sydney. She really hasn't played a match since probably October because she's had back issues. And you know, she wants a coach. She and Darren Cale parted company very amicably, absolutely. They're still very close, still very friendly and all that. It wasn't a negative thing. But she wants a coach. She needs a coach. And that is probably, I'm thinking, the big upset of the tournament. I think Kaia Kanepi might beat Simona Halep.
All right.
First round.
Okay, there's one for all the punters out there as well. The new heat stress code.
Yep.
Will we see it in force today, possibly? And are you glad you're not going to be talking about the wet bulb this year?
Yeah.
What? Did you ever see the wet bulb? We were talking about it before.
No. They should have had a device? Light bulb with water in it or something like that. No, I've never seen the wet bulb. I don't even want to talk about that hideous equation that they used to come up with. This is a way more straightforward. There are four factors. Among those factors are the air temperature, the humidity situation and all that. So it's going to be a lot more straightforward in determining when play needs to stop and players need to get a break and things like that. So it's good. The players agree.
Do you think a lot of that pressure came from Novak Djokovic when he actually questioned the safety on court from a player's perspective?
Look, I think the team at Tennis Australia are very aware of it. Craig Tiley, Wayne McHugh and the referee and all that. You know, this is not something that, you know, has just been decided overnight. There's a long process in determining, because they had to work out a policy, a guideline, rules and all that on how they were going to do it. So it takes time. And, you know, they've certainly looked at it with the medical staff, obviously, as well at Tennis Australia. So, you know, it's a good move. It's an important move because on these courts, as we know what it's like over here, it can be very, very draining.
Everybody can understand where he comes from, you know, at some point, you know, when you feel like you're never going to get back to 100%, and you've had the success that Andy's had, you know, you can only understand the decision, you know. Now, I was disappointed and sad and a little bit shocked, you know, that to know now that we're going to lose him at some point, but we're going to lose everybody at some point. So it's just that now it's definite.
Roger Federer there speaking about Andy Murray, who I think surprised everyone with his press conference and how revealing he was on Friday. And I think it took a lot of people in the tennis world and those who don't follow tennis as closely by surprise as well, how debilitating this injury has been. And this could be it, Craig, for Andy Murray.
Well, yeah. On the 1st of January, I put a year's preview out on one of the other people, clients I work with, wearetennis.com. And in that, while I didn't name him, I said, be prepared for a high-profile retirement this year. Mm. And I figured it would be Andy. So it is sad, as Roger was saying, disappointing and sad. You know, for somebody who's had such an incredible career to go out not on his own terms, I think is you feel for the guy big time. I mean, it was this year at the Australian Open last year he pulled out and stayed in Melbourne and had the surgery on his hip over here. It's just a shame.
You kind of feel a little bit sad for him too, because yep. When you projected long-term maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you always felt like there'd be that period after the others had dominated where he was 3, 4, 5 years younger than a few of them with Federer and Nadal, mm-hmm. that he might get a couple of years at the end of his career free of them and their challenges. But unfortunately, he's not really going to get the farewell he wanted.
It's going to be even tougher for him to be able to watch it and not be part of it. And he and Novak are only a week apart in birthdays. So, you know, he'll be able to see Novak going through and winning these titles and wishing he was there to try and stop that or have an opportunity to win these majors.
One last one on Andy Murray before we let him go. What about his position within the yep. tour? And we see this stonewall, pretty straight down the line guy in mm-hmm. press conferences. And it was actually nice to see some emotion from him the other day when he almost broke down, essentially. What's he like on the tour? Is he respected? Is he highly regarded? Does he have lots of friends?
Incredibly.
Is he social? What's he like?
Incredibly. He has this dour sort of personality for, you know, the outside. He's a very funny guy. He's the king of the one-liners. He's highly, highly respected by his peers, both for his work ethic, his ability on the court, his mind, his personality, and you know, all of those things. And they really like Andy. Nick Kyrgios referred to him almost like a brother. Mm. Andy is very welcoming and a really nice person. So all the players are feeling bad about this. They really are, genuinely are. It's not a case of, oh, just for the cameras, they're saying something. It's a genuine feeling. And yeah, the emotional side of it, it's not surprising.
Yeah. It's a real shame to see him head out like that, but yep. another star that's been shining so bright for a long time is Roger Federer. Mm. How is he still doing this? Like, it's quite remarkable that he still not only has the body composition that keeps it going physically, but he has the mental aptitude to keep pushing himself beyond these boundaries. Mm. He's reinvented himself 3 or 4 times throughout his career and changed yeah. the way he plays. He plays short points now. He's incredible. He's been an amazing tennis player and still is.
Absolutely. And I think for another year and a half.
Yeah.
The thing is with these guys, these competitive juices are in them all the time. Yeah. They have to compete. But with Roger or Novak or Andy or Rafa, Stan, each one feeds off the next. You know, Roger will very easily say that Novak or Rafa have helped make him a better player. And to keep on going, because as you're saying, reinventing, finding new ways to make sure he stays on top of the game, you know, getting back to number one in the world February last year.
It's amazing.
Absolutely remarkable. I mean, these guys are just freaks of the game.
Craig Tully has joined us, boss of the Australian Open, and it's always a pleasure to talk to him on day one. Craig, good morning and welcome back to RSN 927.
Good morning. Good to be talking again. Morning, guys. A good, nice, sunny sunny Melbourne morning.
Yeah, and hopefully it doesn't get too hot later on this afternoon. There were some early forecasts for high 30s, but looks like we're just going to be mid-30s, so a little bit more comfortable for those heading to Melbourne Park today. And do you think we might see the new heat policy in action later on?
It doesn't look like today. I mean, as you said, the initial forecast was to be high, which then we would have we could have very likely have been in the stage 4 or 5 of that. But certainly today, I think it's the mid-30s, just below the mid-30s. So that's positive for all of us because it means that our fans and the players will be in conditions that are at least more bearable than what was initially forecast.
Are you glad you don't have to talk about the wet bulb anymore?
Yeah, very happy about that. I think that was one of the main motivations for changing the heat policy, to try and explain what that was. Because everyone thinks it's a temperature, and then when it's lower, it just doesn't make any sense. But now this logarithm that all these four climatic factors work into this continuum of 1 through 5, it's much easier to understand, and it's more scientific. And I think the research that's been done over the past year and a half is a culmination of that.
From an Australian point of view, it must be great to have so many fans that will flock there today to see both Alex Dimonor and Ash Barty in action. How happy are you that they've both slotted into day one?
Well, you know, it's a great way to start the tournament. This is our Champions Day. We've got all the champions playing on Rod Laver Arena in the afternoon, and the champions and last year's champions tonight. We've got a special celebration and to Rod Laver tonight, and a special recognition of him before we start the matches. So a great Champions Day. And then, of course, the young players, Ash Barty, Alex Dimonor, and the other Australian players on today. We've got, you know, about a fair split group between the top and the bottom half playing today and tomorrow. And with 22 Australians in the draw, that's the most we've had since for the last 9 years. So great look to the future, and particularly with them doing so well.
Craig, year on year, the stadium itself and the facilities keep developing and changing. It's certainly something to behold now with so many great feature courts. Does that make it easier for the scheduling as well?
Well, certainly the venue is magnificent. I mean, the feedback we're getting from the players that this is state of the art and best in the world, and so that's great to hear from them. Certainly, we make them a bit happier. It's a lot easier with scheduling. You don't have to deal with some of the stresses we have with scheduling, and there's other factors that add to the pressure. But the scheduling is never easy. There's a whole series of permutations that have got to be considered and variables that need take into the calculation of what's best and what's matched when to put it. But so far it's been worked out. We managed to get the schedule for today and tomorrow done early, which the players appreciate. And it looks like the weather for the rest of the week is going to be manageable to the point where we can put some great matches on the outside courts for the ground spot holder and some magnificent matches also in our stadium.
That is very high. Has he got enough? He has. McCullum this time with a 6 off the final ball of the over. And I don't think Joe Menny's going to get another one. Well, this is high. How far has it gone? Has he got enough on it? Yes. A big 6 for Brendan McCullum.
There we go. Plenty of action last night down at Cadinia Park, Bryce, which was good to see some big bash back down there. I thought the pitch was a lot better last night.
Yeah, really good wicket. And, the Brisbane Heat batting first took full advantage of that good wicket.
4 for 192 they made. The Melbourne Renegades in reply all out for 91, and one man who picked up a couple of wickets along the way was Josh Lalor, 2 for 12 from his 3 overs. They shared the wickets around last night, the Heat, and it gets them back on track in this big bash. Josh, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you're up early, but I think you're up early watching the NFL. Are you a Pats fan?
No, I'm not a Pats fan, luckily. Unfortunately, I'm a bit of a Browns fan. So, better things coming this year.
Yep.
But it's a bit of a stinker, to be honest, this game. So, could have had an extra 2 hours sleep, I think.
No doubt about that. Do many of the boys get up to watch it? Have you got a few NFL fans up at the Heat?
We've got a couple. Not many that get up at 5 past 5. more of the coaching staff, to be honest. James Hopes and Dan Vittoria big NFL fans, but I don't think they got up this early. They might watch the Saints Rams, the Saints Eagles game in an hour or so, I think. So.
comprehensive last night, Josh. Really set the tone early on with the bat, but then shut the game down. It's one of the biggest wins of all time in the Big Bash.
Yeah, the boys played really, really well. As you mentioned, I actually thought the wicket was a bit better. I don't think it was a 192 with it or whatever we got in the end. full credit should go to the Bash brothers, or the three boys at the top of the order there, who I thought batted out of their skin. Actually, Brian did a fantastic job, as he has done for us most of the tournament, setting the foundation for Lenny and Baz to do their thing. And then, as a bowling unit, when we bowl really well, we pride ourselves on being really, really clinical. And we were lucky to do that, I think, in the power play, which sort of set the scene for the rest of the innings. So I think we were really good in both power plays, and that probably set up the rest of both innings.
Josh, you've really got some weapons at the top of the batting order there, and it seems like they handed over the role of the real aggressor. So Max Bryant, right from the top, like he really set the tone. He was going hard from the start, where Brendan was just sort of working the ball around a little bit. Then it got handed over once he went out. Brendan started going hard, and Chris was Lenny was a bit quiet at the start of his innings, and really set himself to then bat through the innings. Has that been conscious from the team? Because in the first few games, it seems like you were just going all helter skelter, see how hard we can go for 20 overs, and it didn't quite work out. Has the reins been pulled and tightened up a little bit to work in those partnerships?
I don't think so. I don't think consciously, to be honest. I think the boys have just naturally worked on being able to bat in partnerships a little bit more rather than both guys going at the same time. And as you said, it looked like there were times when some of the boys took some time to get into their innings, and you turn around and you're able to score 192 with guys giving themselves time, which sounds a little bit counterintuitive. So there's some super talented players in that batting order. We didn't get to see much of some of our better players again last night. Like, we know the Demis, the Cutsy can often do it, the Ben Cunning can often do it at the end of the innings as well. So, again, it comes back to being a little bit more game aware, I think, and hopefully innings like last night, with the guys being able to, as you said, hand off the responsibility at times and still end up with a mammoth score, hopefully that's something they can aim for the rest of the tournament.
In terms of crafting an innings too, and we saw it last night from McCullum and Lynn, there was no rush at the start. I mean, they were both pretty happy to be 20 off 20 and work their way into the game. How important is that for, say, the top five or six batsmen at each club? Because there are periods where players will come in, and for those who bat further down the order, where they can't really get settled and they have to smack it around as soon as they come in. Now, how important is it for those top order batsmen?
Yeah, I think it's crucial. It's probably more crucial for the guys at the top of the innings, and then as you slide down the order, the necessity to probably be 20 off 12 or 13 probably becomes more of a priority. But as you said, and as we've just spoken about, you can be 20 off 20 if you have that ability to ramp it up later on. And, you know, the Big Bash is just about as good a tournament, 2020 tournament, is in the world. Any team's top three or four could probably afford to be 20 off 20 and then look to get 60. You know, end up 60 or 40 down the line. So we're very lucky, but we understand that that's going to happen against us at times as well. So we need to be ready to combat that.
Josh, straight after the game, is the first thing you do is cast your eye to the table, because you dropped early games and now you're playing catch-up. You've got a game in hand on a majority of the teams now. You've played seven, you're 3-4. But if you win your next one, it's 4-4, and it's just even Steven with still six games to go after that. I'm saying a lot of numbers, a bit confusing.
Yeah, that's right.
But is that a real goal, to get to that 4-4, and then you can launch from there?
I'm a bit of a nerd, so you're exactly right. I go straight to the table, and I'm just stinging for us to get back to even, so then we can start. One, it's probably a suggestion that we're starting to play some good cricket, but... Yeah. Just stinging to get sort of back to even first, and then we can go again and have another run to finish the season really well. So we've got some good games coming up this week. We play both Sydney teams. We play the Thunder at the Gabba, which will be a good game for us, and then we head back to Sydney to play the Sixers. So, you know, if we can hopefully get a little run of wins together and get back to 5-4 by the end of the week, that'd be great. But I think at 0-3, there was some itchy butts around the dressing room, but as you've got to understand that everyone's got to play 14 games and not everyone's going to win 12 of them. So the competition traditionally has always been tight.
And 7-7 or 8-6 is probably going to get you into that fourth spot. So for us, it's just about finding that brand of cricket we can play consistently. We know you're not going to win 8 games, 9 games in a row, but you need to have an identity and you need to be able to reproduce that a little bit. So I think at the start we weren't able to do that, and we're getting a bit closer now.
We've got to head to Scott McDonald, who's on the line over in Scotland. The former Socceroo joins us as the Aussies got one back. They're now 1 win, 1 loss in the Asian Cup with a decisive game to come against Syria. And Scott joins us on the line this morning. Scott, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
We're very well.
Is it warm out there, is it?
It sure is. We're only aiming for a top of 40 here today in Melbourne. What's it like in Scotland?
Windy, rainy, and near enough almost zero. So lovely here too.
I actually would prefer the windy, rainy, and close to zero than 40. I'm not a heat man myself. There was plenty of heat on the Socceroos actually after the first game against Jordan. A few criticisms that they might have gone in a little too overconfident. What did you make of first of all the fight back against Palestine? But more importantly, the disappointment first up.
Bit of a shock first up. Obviously, the expectation levels, you know, of the team, the squad, albeit there's a couple of, you know, players missing from that squad at full strength. But still, you would expect, you know, the Socceroos to get over the line against the Jordanian side. But once they got their noses in front, you know, early on, it made it very difficult for us to get back in the game. Frustrated us a lot. Couple of chances, but never was convincing. So there was a lot of, like you said, a lot of heat, a lot of pressure on, you know, the boys to, you know, to perform and most importantly get a result in the second game, or else, you know, it was everything or nothing. You know, with that game they had to win it, and you know, Graham Arnold and his boys showed great character to come back from that disappointment and albeit dominate the Palestinians. I thought, you know, and it was a great comfortable win in the end. And there was no one more delighted for Jamie McLaren than myself, because if anyone knows the pain that you go through and the desperation just to get that goal, it's me, you know. So I was more than pleased for him to get that monkey off his back, and hopefully now he can go from, you know, strength to strength for the Socceroos.
Spending his time at Hibs at the moment as well, so he's got a good Scottish connection with you, Scott McDonald. I wanted to ask about Jamie McLaren, the relief he would feel and what this will do for his game, and what you might have thought 3 minutes into the game where he had one basically set up on a tee for him to just pass back into the back of the net, essentially, but had an air swing. I'm sure his confidence at that stage might have taken a bit of hit, but good for him to get on the score sheet finally.
Yeah, I can imagine he was thinking about that a lot, you know, after the incident. Probably take him a good 5-10 minutes to shake it off. Been there before many times myself, you know, but it goes, again, it shows the strength of character, not, you know, just from the team, but from himself, you know. He believes in himself. He's come out and he said, you know, he's probably got the best ratio, you know, goals to games, you know, within, you know, playing for a club level. And he wants to go and show that at international level. It's not quite worked the way he wanted to, but Graham Arnold showed belief and faith in him, albeit there's been a couple of injuries. But, you know, after the disappointment of, you know, the first game against Jordan, it could have been easy just to have dropped him. But, you know, Graham stuck with him. And that's what you want as a player. You want that, you know, from your manager to believe in you. And sometimes I didn't quite have that in my spell, you know, playing for the Socceroos. So it's wonderful for Jamie and great from Graham Arnold, you know, psychologically. And obviously he believes in Jamie as well. And he's come up with the goods for him and the team and the nation. And it's great for everyone. And like I said, you know, hopefully he can go from strength to strength now, because he is a quality player. This year has not been quite, or should I say this season, not quite been the season that he would have hoped to up until now. But I hope they just can kickstart him for the rest of the campaign. And whether that's, you know, after, you know, the Socceroos exploits, whether that's going to be at Hibs or not, we'll have to wait and see. Because, you know, I'm hearing, obviously, there's possible movements on that.
Scott, Australia in the next round, the next game they play is against Syria coming up. That's Wednesday, 12:30 a.m. our time here in Melbourne. I guess they go in with an enormous amount of confidence, banging in three in the last game against Palestine.
Yeah, of course, most definitely, and the performance. I think Jackson Irvine was you know, fantastic as well. You know, coming in, been desperate to start for a long time. And, you know, I think more or less he made that jersey his own, you know, against the Palestinians. There's no question for me he has to start the next game. He's such a powerhouse in there. He's a real aerial threat. You know, now that obviously Tim's gone and we've lost a bit of that aerial prowess, I think, you know, having someone, you know, like that in the squad is, you know, ever so, it's such a positive, because in Asian football, they don't deal with the aerial sort of, you know, attacking abilities as well as, you know, probably other nations do. So to have someone like Jackson in the team when you can throw it in there certainly causes a lot of upset, and possibly the referee as well, which was, he was crazy, you know, against Palestinians. I thought some of the refereeing decisions in that game were unbelievable, but you have to expect that within Asian football. It does happen, so it's just important, you know, that they build now from that, take the confidence from it. Mark Milligan, again, leading by example, was excellent. And I think they can take a lot of confidence from it. You know, it looks like, well, it's most definitely going to have to finish runners-up now within the group, which means they'll play Al Ain, I think, in the round of 16. So whether or not that's going to be Uzbekistan or not, you know, I'm thinking ahead already.